morning and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host and my co-host, Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Up Publicity, with you each and every Saturday evening, bringing you Shattered Lives on a host of topics. And it is with much pride and pleasure that I say we have a very, very interesting and cutting-edge topic this evening. We've worked for many weeks, in fact, many months, to have these guests on. And we have two esteemed guests from Truckers Against Trafficking. And so before I bring them on, let me bring on Delilah. Delilah, how are you tonight, my co-host, my PR manager, my buddy pal? What's going on?
I'm doing great, Donna. Thank you. And just to let people know out there, listeners, if we stumble along, it's because I have no internet, so I'm calling in. Donna's running the switchboard, so bear with us, and we'll get through this.
Okay, well, we're going to think positive. So, in any case, Delilah, this is a topic very close to our hearts, is it not? I mean, we have some very, very stellar guests with respect to the National Director of Truckers Against Trafficking. I mean, before a few months ago, I wasn't even aware that this organization existed, and I think a lot of people may not know about their contribution. So
I was just going to say I work with several people who are very into the human trafficking issue, and I'm sure that a lot of them are listening, and if they're not, then they will be on the podcast. So I'm sure that all of the information that we're going to pull out of these guests tonight is going to go a long way towards, you know, helping fight the battle of trafficking within the trucking industry.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And so just to have a little bit of an introduction, Candace Paris is the executive director and co-founder of Truckers Against Trafficking, which is a 501c3 organization whose purpose is to educate, equip, empower, and mobilize members of the trucking and travel plaza industry into combat domestic sex trafficking. And she's been involved with the organization since 2008. She is very accomplished. She co-coordinated a national human trafficking awareness conference in Denver, Colorado at that time, and co-founded Colorado's Volunteer Network to End Human Trafficking and to mobilize volunteers in her state. And she has also done a number of other activities and is also a board member of Denver Metro Crime Stoppers. And our other esteemed guest is from my home state of Connecticut, Andy Anastasio Jr. And he is involved with his own trucking agency, the Anastasio Group in New Haven, Connecticut. Has had experience not only in many facets of transportation, but rail, waste management, commercial, residential development, restaurant, and wood recycling. So with that very brief introduction, I say, Candace and Andy, welcome to Shattered Lives. It's a pleasure to have you this evening.
Thanks so much, John. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
Well, great. It's wonderful to have you, and particularly since we're sort of coattailing on your national conference you had a couple weeks ago. Is that not right, Andy?
Yes. We were actually very excited. It was a 93rd annual convention held by the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut, and It was extremely exciting this year for a couple of reasons, but I was actually brought on as chairman this year, and one of the things that I brought early on in my chairmanship to the board was Truckers Against Trafficking. And just before that, I had read an article on it, and it was introduced to Candace, and she supplied me with information. I immediately signed my company up for it and then brought it to the board. And when I brought it to the board, they unanimously agreed to get behind it, the Motor Transport Association, and get it out to all of its 800 member companies. And, you know, just a brief aside, it's kind of a funny thing that, you know, you talk about this and you just don't think that it happens around here. And when I brought it up before the board and showed them a small video that Candace was so gracious to send to us that kind of gives an indication of exactly what goes on, everybody was astounded. And, you know, after some of the directors came up to me and says, you know, I've passed by a particular one guy in particular. He goes from Hartford to Providence all the time, and there's a stretch of Route 6, and there's a rest area. And he says, I go by there, and I see these what I consider not legal activities going on. He says, and I usually make a phone call, you know, to the local authorities. He says, never realizing that, you know, these are kids, these are people being trafficked. So it was, you know, resounding, jumping on board and wanting to get behind this. But the convention was very exciting because we brought Candace in to actually be a guest speaker. And I'll let her, you know, talk a little bit about what she did there. But we also were able to award her the what the Motor Transport has is the Good Buddy Award. And it's actually the first time in the history of the Motor Transport that it's been given to a female and also an out-of-state resident.
Is that
so
right? Wow.
We were very excited.
Wonderful. That's great. Now, Candace, you might can you tell us a bit about what your presentation was like, and then perhaps give us from the executive director perspective an overview of your organization?
Sure. Well, it was just great to be in Connecticut. Just incredible hospitality, and I was able to first do a workshop presentation where I really went into more of the training aspect and helping people understand really what TAT is all about and how they personally can get involved, which was great. Very attentive audience and well attended, which was super. And then the luncheon was just fantastic because, you know, they had brought in their state senator and the DOT commissioner and the commissioner of the DMV and the state police. And, you know, they present the award and then every office stands up and talks about their support of Truckers Against Trafficking and what they're going to be doing in order to get the message out there. And so to have that kind of support and to have the State Trucking Association really spearhead that, it's just phenomenal. And it really is creating a model for other state trucking associations to follow. So it was just great, you know, and Andy was, you know, really at the helm of that hospitality thing. We just had a terrific time. You know, I just had an amazing time in Connecticut. So it's just, and of course,
well,
not just hospitality, but the support of MTAC
right.
was great.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that that we're with you in the forefront. Let's talk a bit about how the organization evolved and some of your goals. And then we can get into some other things.
So TAT began as an initiative of our family's ministry in 2009. And as it began to grow, and especially when we put out our training DVD, which is really a centerpiece, and Andy was mentioning a clip from it, of the training that we do, it was really, I was saying, we really need to make this its own nonprofit. And so I wrote up the papers in 2011, and TAT, the actual organization, was born. So it's very, very young. which is, again, just a testament to the trucking industry and then getting behind it. And we have three major goals. You read our mission statement, which is educate, equip, empower, and mobilize the trucking industry to combat domestic sex trafficking as part of their regular jobs, because as the eyes and ears of the nation's highways and as this crime literally comes knocking on their doors, who better than the trucking industry to actually respond to this? And so helping
right.
them understand what they're looking at, just like Annie was mentioning, a colleague of his was talking about, helping them understand that there's a forced piece of this. And we're not saying every person out there is a victim of human trafficking, but some are, and particularly if you have a minor involved, then most definitely it's sex trafficking. So helping them understand what they look like, what they're looking at, and then making those calls and getting involved and helping spread the word. So that's really the first piece. The first goal is to saturate the trucking industry with our training materials. As I mentioned, we have that training DVD. It gives a comprehensive view of domestic sex trafficking in terms of what it looks like along our nation's highways and how the trucking industry specifically can combat it. We have our wallet card that gives red flags to look for and questions to ask, and really it breaks down the actionable information that we're asking the trucking industry to provide when they call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. And that number is the 888-373-7888 number. That number is run by Polaris Project out of Washington, D.C., who obviously they turn over the information to local law enforcement, the FBI, but also that's the number to call to access victim services. So getting that really across the trucking industry nationwide. But here's the trick. There are 9 million members of the trucking industry. It's a huge industry when you think everybody from a CEO to a company to a driver to a manufacturer to a mechanic. And so how do we reach them all? And that's one of the reasons one of our strategies is to work with the state trucking associations in order to reach those member companies in their state.
Mm-hmm.
Our second goal is to partner with law enforcement to facilitate the investigation of human trafficking. That happens obviously through the calls and the tips, but it also happens through key intel. Sometimes things come into us directly, and we're able to turn that over to law enforcement. And then we work with law enforcement and something called our coalition builds, where we get the general managers of truck stops in the same room with the law enforcement who investigate trafficking cases on their lot to build trust and rapport and to really put their heads together and say, how can we close loopholes to traffickers together? Recognizing, again, the sheer numbers of the trucking industry and how can they help law enforcement really focus their efforts, along the nation's highways. And typically, you've got those truck stops that are kind of on the outskirts of town. And so
right.
it's not that law enforcement just do not have the resources to monitor those kinds of, things 24/7. And so how can we get trucking, specifically truck stops, travel plaza folks, working together with them? And then our third major goal is to marshal the resources of the trucking industry to combat this crime. And that is a host of different things, from funding the organization to CB radios for law enforcement to, utilizing trucks, whether it's our decals or putting our logos on trucks, whatever, to help get this message out there. But number one, of course, the number one resource is the partnerships. It's the people. It's people like Andy who read an article and then go and push this whole thing through their state. I mean, that right there.
That's the way you want it to happen, right?
Absolutely. That's what we're looking for. It's everyone a change maker, right? And someone just deciding, this is terrible. I'm going to do something about it. And really, so I mean, that's what we're looking for.
Oh, do you have somewhat of a membership in all 50 states?
Because of the way we work, and so, for example, right, I spoke at that luncheon, and there were a lot of decision makers of companies in that room. They now take the information back. They or may not train their company with it, so it's very hard for us to determine who all is getting this information. We have a CAT train button on our website, and I encourage anybody in trucking who's listening who's trained their drivers, get on that and let us know who you've trained. But for us, we consider you a trucker against trafficking if you get it, right? If you understand that there potentially are minors and people under pimp control who are out there working the lot, and you can make a difference if you make that phone call and that you're telling other people about it and you're changing your perception in terms of how you look at prostitution on a whole. For us, then you really are a trucker against trafficking.
So essentially it's a train-the-trainer model?
It really is a transit trainer only because how else can, you know, there's no way we could get in and talk to them all. So, yeah, we ask safety directors of companies or the CDL instructors at the trucking schools or truck stop management, make this a regular part of your training, regular part of your orientation so that all of your employees are able to see this.
Well, that's great. Can you tell us something about the protocol, something about part of the content of the training so that we know what kinds of information you do impart to the truckers?
Right. So what we did on the training DVD is actually when you watch this, it's all – there's training aspect, but it's all in the context of a larger story. It's actually a story of Sherry, who at 15 with her cousin Chrissy, who was 14, got kidnapped off the side of the road, were forced to work in a house across town, and then were actually sold on a lot. It was a trucker who made a call, and it led to Sherry's rescue that night, Chrissy's rescue a week later, and opened up a 13-state prostitution ring. And interspersed in there, we have FBI, we have assistant district attorney, really defining what human trafficking is. You have live footage of minors, for sure, walking the lot. So you're actually looking at the evidence while you're hearing the definition of human trafficking. And then we break down, okay, this is the number to call. This is what you do when you respond to this. This is, you know, you're recognizing that these people need help. And what we're trying to help truckers against trafficking, we're trying to help people understand is what is her story? How did she get out there in the first place? Is there somebody putting her out there? Questions that maybe you typically just wouldn't ask, or you just assume, well, they want to be out there. If they're out there, you know, nobody's putting them out there, right? Or you just don't even think about it. And so now it's putting that radar screen back, you know, it's putting that on people's radar screen. And then, like I mentioned with the wallet card, it really is, you know, a lot of when the stories come back, a lot of them, you know, it's actually folks talking with the victim and finding out they're a runaway and they're under PIM control or whatever it may be. And so those questions to ask in our wallet card and those red flags to look for and the actionable information we're asking the truckers to give to law enforcement are really central pieces of our training. We actually just developed a training piece specifically for general managers of truck stops as well. And, of course, we go into that when we do our coalition builds around the nation as well.
Oh, wow, that's good. Do you recommend that the truckers keep their distance and observe and report, or do they sometimes want to kind of get involved in the thick of the matter? You say, you know, don't approach the pimp or whatever?
That's a great question. We certainly would not ask them to approach any kind of pimp. Sometimes a call can be made from the anonymity of the cab, and you've just observed a situation from a distance. Sometimes the knock is literally coming on your door, and so how do you respond? You know, so calls are coming in either, you know, in a variety of different ways. I don't often hear of truckers approaching pimps. We have that on the back of our card. We ask for them not to do that. We ask general managers not to do that. We ask them not to, you know, try and take a girl and drive off the lot or anything like that. They're putting themselves in danger. They're actually putting the victim in more danger. And so it's really a matter of getting law enforcement out there if you see a minor working the lot or you suspect pimp control. We also ask the drivers to go into the truck stop area. It's well lit. The manager on duty is a local person. If this case does actually go to court, they're the ones who might be called to testify. It's just a smarter thing. They also need to be aware of what's going on, the activity on their lot as well. So that's another strategy we're asking the trucker to actually do is go inside and report this as well.
Oh, I see. Lila, would you like to come in here for a few questions?
Sure. You know, one of the things that just come, you know, from general public, what is the perception of truckers themselves utilizing truck stops for buying sex? Where does that come in?
You know, I don't know. I don't have, and Andy, I don't know if there's an actual number out there. I mean, obviously, there is a portion of drivers who purchase commercial sex. Why then else would we have human trafficking situations or prostitution in the first place at truck stops.
Right.
Certainly some are. And the ones really we're going after are the ones who aren't, obviously. So while you definitely have that segment of the industry, I have found, and maybe Andy, because you've been in the industry so long, but I have found that those are the minority of drivers. And so we can, and you've got about 3 million CDL drivers, CDL holders in the United States. So if we can get the majority of them really working together on this, then it really can make a dent. But Andy, I want to let you comment on that as well.
I agree. I've been in the business my entire life. I rode with my dad as a little kid. And the percentage, 99.5% of the drivers that I've known in my lifetime were good family, good values, and that's, you know, a part of one of the things that I'm trying to bring back to the industry. Years ago, you know, truckers were somebody to look up to in time of need. If you were broke down, if you needed directions, if you had problems on the road, they were kind of the knights of the highway. And then, you know, over time, I don't know exactly what happened. Some of our fast-paced society, you know, whatever, kind of changed the outlook on truckers. And what I'm trying to bring back is that mutual respect and having the truckers be the good guys, working with law enforcement on this type of thing. And from what we've seen, and from, you know, when I just talked to my own drivers and people in other companies that I've shared this with, they're totally appalled. They're against it. So it is kind of the minority of the amount of drivers that would partake in that. Of course, in all industries and in all walks of life, you have people that do. Truck stops are a very transient, you know, place. It's a place where you go in and out, and you know, there are guys that are out, you know, on the road for long periods of time. So I think that the you know, the traffickers are targeting that as a great area to be in. Getting back to the tape, and one of the things I think was probably one of the most impactful things that I seen on the tape, besides the you know, what happens to these people and kids that are picked up, is what the driver said. And I'm going to paraphrase, but we all know today we're in a "if you see something, say something" society. And this one driver, you know, kind of summed it up with, you have three options when somebody approaches your truck, meaning, you know, somebody that's being trafficked. You can invite them in, you could do nothing, or you can make a phone call. And making that phone call can significantly change someone's life, change, as Kenda says, a group of people's lives, because this is something that it's typically not one person, it's a group. And sometimes backed by other groups. And, you know, up here recently there was a trafficker that was running a group of people up and down 95 corridor. And they move. They continually move this way here. There's no trackability. So, you know, again, it's a shame, and I think it's one of the things that most in the trucking industry are appalled at, that we're kind of thrown in is that target industry that the traffickers are using.
Right. Well, how long typically does the interactions, exchanges take place? Because I'm wondering, you know, if this happens fairly quickly, aren't they concerned that by the time the police gets there, you know, they will have left the truck stop?
Generally, what we've seen is when they're working a truck stop, they're in there for some period of time. You know, they're kind of going from truck to truck, you know, trafficking them, you know, being trafficked. So if they have somebody that is interested and they're in the cab for some time, and then they'll go on to another truck. I've had some of my drivers say, and, you know, Ken, this and I have spoke about this in the industry, and you know, people have seen it. There was a sticker that is now replaced with TAT, and it was a sticker that said "No Lot Lizards," and there was a picture of a kind of a lizard standing up, looking like a female lizard, if you would. And truckers were you know, they're in there to get their rest so they can keep going with their trip, and you know, the good guys don't want to, you know, keep getting, you know, somebody banging on the door and, hey, you know, you want a date type of thing. And they are there for some period of time. And you know, with the training that we get from Candace, you know, in her tapes and information is, you see this, get as much information as you could. If you can get, you know, some type of description of vehicle, marker number, people, how many, where, what, call that in, get it to the authorities so they can come out and handle it in the professional way, the way they're trained and how to handle it, and try to get the victims to a safe haven. That's you know, the key.
Yeah, I imagine it would be. With regard to inside the truck stop, now these young people, kids, are in there, you know, homeless, what have you, loitering around. Has that atmosphere changed with respect to, are there security guards at truck stops, or did the managers in there try to surmise the situation and do walkthroughs and say, hey, you know, this kid's been hanging around this bathroom for like, you know, an hour, and I mean, how do you assess from that perspective that there's something not right here about this particular young person over here?
Well, I think from truck stop, it varies in terms of what level of security they have. Some obviously have security guards, some don't. I am not familiar with a number of, you know, teenagers loitering around truck stops.
Okay.
I think where you're going to see minors, where you're typically going to see minors, it's unaccompanied, obviously, minors or people who are not just passing through on a road trip or whatever. But suspicious activity is most likely going to be occurring on the lot, what they call the row where the trucks are parked. Now, that's not to say that doesn't occur, that, you know, loitering or something like that, you know, certainly. And if you have a homeless teen or, you know, it makes sense that they might show up there. But I'm not aware of any kind of numbers or statistics or, you know, in working with our truck stop partners, I haven't heard any of them point to this as a major problem. What this training does do is it does help put a mindset shift is beginning to take place. You know, Andy brought up the term lot lizard, and for us that's really kind of the heart of the issue here, is helping people move from that dehumanizing, objectifying term to, I mean, we're going to be winning the day if the first thought the trucker gets when he gets a knock on the door is potential victim of human trafficking. If that's the first thought rather than it's just another lot lizard, then we're going to be winning the day. Now, we have a ways to go in that, but that's every presentation I make, I speak to that term. We actually have just filmed a media piece around that. I'm very excited for this media piece to come out all around this term, because it really is, it does go to the heart of that. And so when you start having that, and every time we do one of our coalition builds, we have a survivor come, and she shares her story in the midst of doing a training piece as well. And that whole mentality, and it's very purposeful in doing that, is in order to get the general manager, get the trucker, get whoever it may be, to recognize again, to ask that question, what is her story? Why is she here? Can I be of some assistance? And, you know, and I understand that we are asking a lot. Managers on duty, truckers, they're trying to do their job, you know, they're trying to run their store and everything like that. However, because of the profession that they are in, they literally are in positions that most of us are not, and really can be that lifeline for,
right,
you know, that kid in trouble, where a lot of people can't.
And again, I think the thought process is, you know, to carry what Candace is saying, is when you see this, it's somebody's, you know, daughter, sister, mom. It's not an innate, you know, object. It's not something that's just, you know, there. And you're putting, you know, a real person's face on it. The other thing is rest areas. You know, in Connecticut we have a few, and I know when I met with the commissioner of DOT, you know, he too realized, and you know, therein lies the problem. Resources are thin.
Right.
You know, the rest areas aren't staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's where the vigilance of more and more people, more eyes on it, needs to be. You know, we're a car, and most truck stops and most even rest areas split. Trucks go in one entrance and park in one area, and cars go in another. So, you know, if you see a car in there, a van or something, there's a reason for it. But, again, you know, law enforcement can't be all over the place. You can't staff every place and have a guard and everybody watching. So it's our responsibility, I believe, as a citizen, to help make the world a little bit better, to do what we should do. And, you know, in this instance, it's really not getting involved. It's just being vigilant, reporting it. And I think the more and more, you know, I think Candace and my goal is if every truck had a huge TAT sticker on it and everybody knew what it was, and every truck stop and every rest area, and, you know, that's part of the thing that we're both promoting, me and the state here, and, you know, Candace nationally, had these signs, and all of a sudden it got to be at a point where, you know what, we don't want to go in truck stops. We don't want to go around trucks. We don't want to go in rest areas because, you know, these guys are all watching for us. Well, you know, we just closed a section out. It's a tiny section, but it's a section of you know, where they're trafficking. It's just doing our part.
Right.
Well, I echo that, and my hope is that a lot of these guys can get arrested along the way, and they are more vulnerable. Traffickers are more vulnerable in transit. So absolutely, if it could be eradicated from trucking, but before that happens along the way, getting a lot of these guys who, and potentially if they are connected to any kind of prostitution ring, taking a lot of them down before it goes. But yes, that is, you know, the ultimate goal here, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say another issue that overlaps so much with trafficking is missing persons. And is there a way or do you provide, you know, let's say, for instance, if you have your program within a particular state or area, how hard is it to provide either the local or the state plazas and truck stops with posters of the missing persons in that area, so everyone is on the lookout? I know there's been specific, I don't know if it's companies or individual truckers who have even put, you know, a missing poster all along the side of their trucks, and I really applaud that effort, because I think if we can put a dent in either issue, it's going to help both.
That would be a great marriage, you know, the people that are very focused on finding the missing, such as Q Center for the Missing, we're going to give them a plug, and people like Candace. I mean, it just kind of dovetails into each other very nicely.
Well, I am aware of some trucking companies who get Amber Alerts. And to me, you know, I think the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is trying to do a very good job of that, and teaming up with, you know, the Amber Alerts that come in. We have been in talk with NCMEC in terms of if they have a potential victim of human trafficking versus, I mean, there's so many missing kids, you would be flooded. It is overwhelming. You have to think about mission drift as well in terms of all of this. But if there are potential, if they truly believe that this kid is most likely in the process of being trafficked, well, then how can, you know, one, I already know that a lot of companies through Qualcomm and things like that receive Amber Alerts, and NATSO, I also know, which is the National Association of Truck Stop Operators, they also are connected with NCMEC and Amber Alert in order to get these missing kids, you know, that kind of information into the truck stops already. But, you know, if they can identify these are high-level cases, you know, what does that look like and how can we use those connections? You know, we are in conversation with them potentially about that and seeing if that's something logistic-wise that can be worked out.
I was just looking at them. Maybe you can share with the audience that the a few of the stats. You know, how many people?
Right.
You know, the amount of money that the industry
yeah.
has, and maybe in closing, you know, the stats. Just the change from since the truckers got involved, how many are reported by truckers, and that type of thing.
Well, sure. We have another half hour to go, Andy, if that's what you're referring to.
No, it just in this little segment, I think
it's
important because a lot of times people listen, and, you know, I quote myself, too, when you're talking to people, and they, you know, sometimes you get the, okay, again, is it that big a deal? Is there that much going on? And when you hear some of
the
stats,
are important.
Yeah, it's astounding.
So why don't you give us some of those?
The Department of Justice estimates that anywhere between 100,000 to 300,000 of America's children are at risk for entering the sex for sale industry every year. And that's, again, we're just talking about America's children. We're not talking,
right.
When we're talking about sex trafficking, we're not talking about labor trafficking, we're not talking about adults or anything like that. Then when you talk about, and you probably saw this, but at the last, I think it was the very, very end of July, the FBI, the Innocence Lost, did one of their nationwide stings, right? They did one of their big roundups, and over 105 kids were rescued, and about 150 pimps were arrested. Now, just to put that into perspective, that was 3 days' time. 3 days' time, 105 kids rescued and 150 pimps arrested. So imagine if they had the resources to go at that level on a consistent basis. How many kids, let alone
right.
adults, would be rescued and how many pimps would be arrested? So that puts that into perspective to some degree. And the reason why they do this is that this is a $32 billion a year industry. It's the second largest criminal activity in the world. It recently surpassed arms trafficking. It is second only to drug trafficking. And as Andy was mentioning earlier, there's a lot of criminal organized crime involved in this because they have figured out that where you can sell a drug or a weapon only one time, you can sell a human being again and again and again. And we have created a culture in the United States where there is, unfortunately, a large supply pool, whether it's the glorification of pimp culture or casual sex or easy money schemes or telling our girls and young women that their value is in how they look or their sexuality or whatever it may be. There's a whole host, not to mention pornography and so on and so forth, and child porn. So it's so very easy for them to recruit another victim. And so, you know, it was statistics like these that led us to create Truckers Against Trafficking. And that one of them was, you know, when the Innocence Lost Task Force does their stings, one of the places that they had found women and children being forced into prostitution were truck stops. And so, again, that was really central to the creation of TAT. And so before TAT existed, calls into the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, again, as I mentioned, the hotline run by Polaris, were very, very sporadic, just here or there. And the latest report was the number through September of this year was 712 calls. And to put that in perspective, 75% of those calls have come in 2012 and 2013. So you are seeing
wow.
that the word is getting out there, truckers. And again, when I say truckers, it could, you just, they ask when they call, are you a member of the trucking industry? You could have general managers. You could have, you know, it's probably the majority are the drivers, but there are other members involved. So the word is actually really getting out there, and that's what's so exciting. And I do think we need to see the numbers go way up before they're going to go down. So to see the actual impact, to have some of those success stories be related and come back, and I'll just share one that is just a super powerful story. And this actually goes back to the earlier question of, you know, do you invite them in? Do you have a conversation or not? And in this case, this gentleman did. He saw a younger girl being walked around the lot by an older man. Well, eventually she made his way to his truck, and he invited her in. They began to have a conversation. And as they're speaking, it comes out she's 14, she's a runaway, she's been picked up by a pimp, she does want help. Well, the pimp, literally while they're talking, comes and gets her out of the truck. The driver was very wise. He let them go. He did not try and interfere at all. He waits and he watches as that pimp begins to take her into the trucker shower area. He gets out of the truck. He goes in and he tells the manager on duty. The manager on duty was TAT trained. They said, let's call the hotline. They called the hotline. They called 911 as well. And 5 cop cars were dispatched. That pimp had an arrest record for kidnapping and assault charges. He was arrested, and the 14-year-old was rescued. And so, obviously, that's how you want every story to go down. They don't always, but that is exactly the kind of impact that the members of the trucking industry can have. And, of course, you know, it's all of the members of the trucking industry playing their part in this in order to get that driver or that general manager trained. It's all of us working together to do that.
Candice, how extent, when you're talking about the training and the videos that you do and certain meetings, how extensive is the training? Is it X number of hours, or every month you have certain things that they need to do? I'm just trying to get an overall picture of that.
That's the great part. We wanted to keep this very simple. The training DVD is only 28 minutes long. We're not talking about rocket science here. It really is a mindset shift. And so for us, it's like, if you can watch this, you're going to have a pretty good feel of what domestic sex trafficking is.
Right.
If after you hear the stories and you see the evidence and you're listening to law enforcement tell you this, if you're still not convinced, you know, I don't know what to tell you. We continue to go on sex and radio. We continue to get the word out. But it's a very basic, simple training. And then we do really hope that people continue to educate themselves, and we have a host of resources on our website.
Well, that's great. In terms of you getting the word out and wanting to get, you know, TAT stickers or whatnot, how close are you to that goal in terms of having every trucker that's interested have that emblazoned on their truck and the use of social media?
Oh, well, we have a long way to go in terms of getting it on every truck. Some companies just don't even allow it. Andy's great, you know. Some companies like Andy's, they look at this and they're like, absolutely, this is something we're going to support. Some of your, you know, huge, huge companies don't allow anything on the window. We're working
hard. Well, that's what I was thinking.
The
independent truckers are more receptive, maybe?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm sorry for interrupting. The independent truckers may be more receptive.
They have more freedom.
Big.
Yeah, your owner-operators have a lot more freedom. And we do
okay.
have a great following on social media. And so anytime we put a new picture up of a trucker who's got our TAT sticker on there, we always get a slew of emails of people asking for more. So, I mean, it's getting out there, but in terms of reaching all 3 million trucks, there's even more than 3 million trucks, there's just 3 million drivers, we've got a long way to go.
Yeah. Why is it that they do not allow the bigger car? Is it just corporate policy and they're very resistant
or in
denial?
I think it's corporate policy. No, I think it's corporate policy, and I think you have companies who are approached by tons of people and groups for this or that or whatever it may be.
Right.
And I think it's, you know, you just have a look for your trucks, and I mean, I can respect that. And there, for me, the sticker is great, and I'd love to see the sticker. I'd much rather have the drivers train, though. If they can do that part, that's the part that I don't want to back down on, you know.
Okay.
If you can train your drivers and have him have that wallet card or her, you know, and they've got the number to call and they know what they're looking at, that's going to go, you know, a lot farther than the sticker.
Yeah, I understand it. How about when you get to individuals, well, states, your state of Colorado, you talk to your representatives and your senators. Legislatively, have these people been receptive to what you're trying to do?
You know, we are really more focused on the trucking industry. What Andy's done in Connecticut, and he can speak to this a little bit more, is work from that angle only because MTAC has some great connections. For us, you know, we want to be supportive of any human trafficking, anti-trafficking bills that are really going to move the movement forward on a whole. But we're not necessarily looking to direct or affect legislation from this angle. We're approaching the trucking industry from, hey, this is a crime that arrives at your doorstep. You know, we're asking you guys to be proactive, to do something about this. The ball is in your court, and really taking the empowerment angle rather than more of a legislative angle. Now, there's a host of things that need to be done from a legislation perspective on anti-trafficking, you know, laws and bills in the United States. And certainly that does affect trucking insofar as, you know, a lot of these, the new bills that are getting passed are requiring, mandating posting of the hotline number in truck stops and so on and so forth. And so we're involved to that degree. But really, in terms of us, you know, creating legislation or anything like that, that's really not our focus and what we're looking to do at this point.
I understand. Yeah, Anderson. You told us about a success story. Do you have the occasion to follow individual cases, like if a trucker was involved in the rescue of someone? I mean, if it does go to court, didn't you mention earlier that certain people may have to become involved in that process, but do they follow up if they were part of the rescue?
You know, so the Polaris at the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, they do the call intake. So we're not involved on that part. And also, and this is actually one of the really nice parts about this number, it's an anonymous phone call. So any of these stories that we get back from Polaris, I don't know the name of the trucker. I don't know if he's an owner-operator, if he's a company driver. I don't know the truck stop. So all of that anonymity is protected, particularly then if you have an open investigation as well. We're not privy to that information. Now, I like that because I think it's great for the trucking industry to recognize, hey, it is anonymous. It actually, to me, it helps remove some of the danger piece involved. It does make it harder for us because we want to find these guys and recognize them as the everyday heroes that they are. So one of the things we're asking companies, because there are drivers that don't worry or care about their anonymity, is ask your guys if they are making calls. If they are making calls and say they're there when law enforcement shows up, hey, you know, what happened? Tell us. You know, we want to know. And, of course, we would then vet that information with the local police or state police, whoever actually showed up on the lot that night. But that is definitely something as we continue to grow and progress. We want to get more of that feedback so we can actually, again, like I said, you know, promote the guys who are actually out there doing it.
Yeah. Oh, I understand. Are there power in numbers with respect to regionally? I mean, it sounds like our state has made some very good inroads by the work of Andy and others. But, I mean, because, you know, 95 goes through more than one state, does it only make sense to get together in a region to try to tackle this problem as well?
You know, I mean, for us, we try to do it state by state only because every state really does have a state trucking association. And we really do want to reach every company. You know, I think, you know, and Andy, I would love for you to tell, speak a little bit about what Andy wants to do in terms of, you know, all of the states on the East Coast and his vision for working with them and trying to get them all on board. I think that would be tremendous and using his influence in that way.
What's your idea, Andy?
Well, through the motor transport associations, each state has their own. We've actually reached out, and Mike Riley is the president of Connecticut, and just tremendous guy. Been there for a long time, has a lot of connections both on the political and with the other motor transport associations. So we've actually met. One of the things that I wanted to do as a chairman. Both myself and the Massachusetts chairman got together with all of the New England states and New York State to try to put together regional, you know, we have a lot of the same issues, how we can work together, what one state does to get through things, you know, so we got a lot in common. And one of the things that we talked about, and Massachusetts did jump on and get behind TAT, is to get all of the state associations, and then through that, push out to their members. We've been very, very fortunate in Connecticut. We visited both the Commissioner of Motor Vehicle and the Commissioner of DOT, who were both very receptive to help. We also talked to the state police, and they were very receptive, and the motor vehicle leaders of the truck squad. And Candace actually shared an experience where they can actually get monies to help something that she set up with Iowa on a pilot program, which is good, and I'll have her speak on that. But with that, Mike and I did a trip to Washington, D.C. Through the ATA, and we actually met all of our representatives and both of our senators. Spent a day just, you know, traveling back and forth across the hill there with certain things. And my main thing was TAT and creating better legislation to stop this and to give help to states to help prevent it. Rosa DeLauro, jumped on board, and she's been a longtime friend. Every one of them was very receptive.
Yeah.
Senator Blumenthal, Elizabeth Esty. I mean, just everybody was jumping on and was very, very good. We come back to Connecticut, and Senator Andrea Stillman actually put some legislation in help on this. And actually, Representative Larry Caffera actually appointed me to a state trafficking and persons council with the Permanent Commission on the Status of Women. So now,
and the Office of Victim Services, right? Aren't you in a committee for that with Linda Tamino?
Exactly.
Right,
so now,
right.
You know, we're starting to see it from all different sides, and you know how once. Again, I had a discussion with somebody today who, kind of lived through one of these experiences. And, I think a lot of these committees and stuff, they're phenomenal. One of the things I'm going to bring is I think we need a few people that really walked in those shoes to be on them, to really, really help format what we need to do. But one of the things, because it turned into a group discussion, and I said, you know, everybody has a part to play in it because, you know, one of the people was saying, well, you should take care of it all. I said, no, we're just there to identify a problem, you know, and then law enforcement is there to bring them in. And then the prosecutor has their in. And then, you know, Office of Victim Services has there's 10, 12 agencies that have a piece in it. I think bringing them all together is a good thing. And I was very fortunate to be appointed to this because I was able to bring what we're doing with TAT on board. But before we run out of time, Candace, maybe you could speak a little bit of what you did in Iowa and some of the other states and we talked to Connecticut about.
Yeah, so the Chief Lorenzen of the Office of Motor Vehicle Enforcement, run by the Iowa DOT, created a fantastic model because Highway Patrol whether it's routine traffic stops, way stations, automatic, they are already going into trucking companies and doing safety compliance meetings. They have so many entry points into the trucking industry. And so can we train that office, first of all, with TAT materials? Because when they make routine, when they're making sometimes these traffic stops, I think sometimes the thought is drugs or, you know, money or smuggling or whatever it may be. And so it just puts, I had a trooper tell me, after seeing your video, it just puts the thought of human trafficking in the back of my head, you know, just brings it more to the fore in those cases. And so starting with training actual law enforcement and then using those opportunities when they make a, you know, when they have to do an inspection on a vehicle, when the driver is at the weigh station, going into the truck stops in their state, having troopers come in and present this information. When they
oh,
are
that'd be great.
Those,
that
the,
sounds wonderful.
Yeah, when they're, yeah, when yeah. they're doing these mandatory compliance safety meetings, having TAT now be a part of the presentation, and that actually bleeds over into the motor coach industry as well. And so we have this model created in Iowa. It's just fantastic. And so, you know, Chief Lorenzo and myself, we've been pitching it to the other state highway patrol. And but of course, good old Andy took it to the and Mike. They took it to the state police in Connecticut, and looks like Connecticut's going to adopt it and put it in place.
All right.
And
my God, that's excellent.
Yeah, and what he's talking about in terms of the funds is that Chief Lorenzen accessed something called asset forfeiture funds, which that's basically bad guy money. So that's the money that they seize from the bad guys,
yeah.
drug bust or
you know about
cases.
That, right, Delilah?
Yeah, it was one of the main issues here in South Carolina when our law was enacted and put together was the asset forfeiture clause, and it should be in every state, and if they don't have it, they should go back and get it in.
Yeah. Well,
so you use those funds for this pilot program?
To pay for TAP materials. So when you go in the state of Iowa, there's TAP materials at the rest stops, and that's what's paying for these materials to help, you know, implement this actual program. So, you know, I'm encouraging because we've had Arizona talk to us, Idaho's talk to us, and, of course, Colorado, my own state. And so I'm very much encouraging them to, hey, if you can access these asset forfeiture funds, please do, because the federal guy has already said this is the kind of program that these funds should be used for.
So we definitely want
to see that.
And we have people from all across the nation and occasionally internationally listening, so we're going to say that now. We've got, I think, about 2 or 3 minutes left. Unfortunately, it's flying by. We'll have to have you come back in a few months with an update. I'd love to do that if possible. And but just in terms of if people who have family members who are truckers out there or other people just want to be able to pass the word, what is the best way in terms of getting in contact or being able to become part of whatever status they have in their state so that they can get involved as well?
The best thing to do is to start by going to our website, which is truckersagainsttrafficking.org.
Right.
That is going to be, you're going to be able to familiarize yourself with all the stuff that we've been talking about today, but then send your trucking contacts there as well. And then if people are interested, they can contact us. They can send us an email at tat.truckers@gmail.com, tat.truckers@gmail.com. And if they are in the trucking industry, hey, we would love to send you a training DVD that you could give to your safety director and ask, could you consider having this be part of regular training and orientation? And that happens all the time. So getting your trucking contacts involved is really, really important. But I would just say to a person who may be listening out there and who has no trucking contacts, you know, talk to just educate yourself more about this and use your sphere of influence to begin to spread the word. You would not believe how many people have an uncle or a brother or a friend or a distant cousin who is in trucking. I find that every time I go and speak to a non-trucking audience that there's some kind of connection. So it really makes a difference. Start spreading the word. Use your influence, and you would be surprised at who you know and who can come back to this and get involved from a trucking standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a wonderful idea, and I know there are a lot of people in our colleagues that we have in our companies I think would like to collaborate because we have a lot of mutual interest here, and it's very exciting to know, and it sounds like you really like your job as executive director. I can hear your passion as well. It's been a pleasure and an honor to have both of you on, and I hope we can keep in touch. And for that, then I'm just going to say thank you so much, Andy, and thank you, Candice. We'll talk to you off air. Thank you for appearing on Shattered Lives, and we're going to end another episode this evening. Thank you, Delilah, and everyone have a good and safe evening.
Thank you.
You too, Donna.
Okay. Thank you.